This episode is brought to you by Springer Mountain Farms Chicken. No antibiotics, herbicides, or pesticides. Just pure chicken, humanely raised on a vegetarian diet. It's the natural choice of celebrated chefs. For more information, visit m.springermountainfarms.com.
Hey, and thanks for joining Heritage Radio Network on tour.
Yeah.
We are your hosts. I'm Katie Mosman-Wadler.
Jack Inslee right here to Katie's left.
Today we are on location in Nashville, Tennessee with Chef Sal Avila at Prima.
Yeah, first day in Nashville for us. Well, we got here last night, to be clear. But loving Nashville so far. We're at Prima. This dining room is really beautiful. Like big glass windows everywhere. Tons of natural light. Very, as we learn, photo friendly.
It's all
yes.
This room.
Yeah.
This radio show.
There is an incredible, huge fiber optic lighting fixture sculpture in the middle of the dining room that is a major focal point.
True.
Really beautiful.
And we just had a hell of a meal here too. Full disclosure. Really, really delicious. But we'll get to all that. Katie, who are we talking to today?
So I'm really, really pleased to introduce Chef Sal Avila. He's originally from Columbia, Tennessee, and he's worked at a number of restaurants in Nashville, including as sous chef to Tandy Wilson at City House, and he's been experienced in kitchens from New York to California. At only 33, he opened Prima as executive chef in 2014 to rave reviews. Eater calls Prima an essential Nashville restaurant, and they've made wine enthusiast lists of America's 100 best wine restaurants for 2 years in a row. Sal, thank you so much for having us here today.
Oh, thank you for coming.
Yeah, this is awesome, man. We're going to start the interview off with a little rapid fire. These are like a series of questions we're asking everybody.
Should I put my apron back on?
What's that?
Do I need to put my apron back on? Or?
You're back on the line. Okay. No, we did forget to mention that Sal's got a tecate with him, which immediately makes him awesome.
No lime, no salt, no training wheels.
So first question we're asking everybody, literally, what is the last great bite that you put into your mouth?
This is an internet show, right?
It is.
So
you can.
I was going to say something about my girlfriend, but it's probably going to be these ricotta dumplings that we have on the tasting menu right now. It's just simply, it's ricotta, Parmesan, and black pepper folded in semolina, and then they sit in the semolina for 2 days, and then we baste them in brown butter. And it's so simple and crispy on the outside and super oozy on the inside. It's very delicious.
Great answer. For us, obviously the last great bite we had was the food we ate here, but first thing we did was Prince's hot chicken last night.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Extra hot. You see our bathrooms yet? They're really nice. Just in case you
It's wonderful actually.
Just in case you need a stop.
There's nice art in there.
Yeah, very nice art. We got four bathrooms.
All right, second rapid fire question, and you gotta be honest. What is in your home refrigerator as we speak?
Ooh, see, it's tough because we're about to start. I have to start the whole 30 diet here in a couple days.
Oh, wow.
Because I feel like I'm 72, even though she just said I'm 35. So right now we have LaCroix, we have passion fruit, mango, and grapefruit.
A variety.
Water. We have several kinds of hummus that I got to throw away tomorrow. I probably have condiments, hot sauce, and some cilantro that has been there since 2012 probably, so... That's about it.
Yeah, that's us too. We have that cilantro at home too. It's nice. It's a good garnish. All right, next question here. This will be a fun one. Your favorite childhood meal, like what comes to mind?
Oh, my mom's enchiladas, without a doubt. She is a pretty amazing cook, but she just always, my favorite ones were just shredded chicken, cheese. She had like that really terrible American, like Mexican blend. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. Like Kraft makes it, like, it's probably all plastic.
Yeah.
That's probably why I'm going to get cancer in a couple of years, because we ate so much of this shit cheese. But I would wake up every morning on Sunday. It was usually on a Sunday. I'd wake up thinking I was getting gassed. Like, I couldn't breathe. And I'm like, run to the kitchen, coughing like I've been smoking for 70 years. And my mom's in there like, oh, good morning. How are you? All happy. And I'm like, I can't breathe. She's got chilies in the oven just roasting away. And then she makes the sauce, enchilada sauce, and then I help her grate the cheese, pull the chicken, roll the little taquitos, and then we put them in a row, bake them, and that was kind of my first experience in the kitchen, too.
Wow.
Grating cheese, pulling chicken, and making enchiladas.
Would that also be, like, your last meal, if you had to have a last
meal? Absolutely. Yeah, the Tennessean did a thing like a chef de jour a couple years ago, and they asked my last meal was with enchiladas, something from City House, something from Crema, and that was about it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right, last rapid-fire question. As we speak, what's, like, the proudest piece of produce you have going in the restaurant right now?
Proudest?
Uh-huh. Like, what are you most proud of?
Actually, it's nothing that it's nothing special. They're just, like, the shit pepperoncinis you get from Restaurant Depot, but we're taking them and we're burning them on a grill. And we take the stem off and then we puree them. I make a vinaigrette out of that. So it's, you know, pickled pepperoncinis, but we burn them and turn them into vinaigrette. And right now I'm doing it with a lot of, like, grilled green beans, and we do, like, raw turnips. It's a really cool little burning peppers is kind of, like, our thing right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We also had a hot sauce here I want to mention. Maybe you could tell. What was the hot sauce you brought us? What was it called?
Well, I brought you four.
You did.
We'll start from the least spicy would be the salsa quemada, which is like the burnt avocados and tomatillos, like raw onions and stuff. Really good, right? That's on one of our dishes for our dinner menu with the chorizo. And we got a sepia braise that goes on the bottom of that. And the second one would probably be the peanuts and guajillo chili salsa. We do that one with it's just for family meal, so we just have those around for us. And then we had the Tennessee Rain, which is kind of a long story, but it's Martin's Barbecue. They have a whole hog barbecue sauce that they call Beach Road 12. They've recently changed it to Jack's Creek. And I take all the what we call the Beach Road 12 poop, which is all the stuff you strain out of the barbecue sauce, and we ferment that and puree it, add some more vinegar, and make our own little kind of Tabasco-style sweet Tennessee Rain. And then we have, can I say it on the radio?
Yeah.
All right, I've always wanted to say this. The Devil's Dick, because it's just pure fire. I mean, Prince's, it doesn't stand a chance. It's like Prince's Extra Hot, that's what this is, on steroids. Yeah.
I was just getting over Prince's Extra Hot, and then I had a taste of
it?
That, and it like...
Did you lick the tip?
Yeah, I did.
That's disgusting.
Yeah. Well, you know.
With that,
thanks.
Jack, I don't think you're ever getting over Prince's Extra Hot.
No.
Did you cry? Did your eyeball sweat?
A little bit.
You get that like right above your eyeball?
Yeah,
your
a little bit. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, that brings us to the end of our rapid fire segment. We have to take a quick break. Please stay with us.
Yeah, we'll be right back.
This episode was brought to you by Springer Mountain Farms Chicken. For almost 50 years, Springer has been family owned and family run. Today, there are over 300 family farmers raising birds in Georgia's Blue Ridge Mountains. Many of them are second, even third generation. They're committed to doing things the right way. Springer was one of the first poultry companies to forego the use of antibiotics, and they've embraced other humane practices too. In fact, they were the first poultry company to earn the American Humane Association's seal of approval. Springer has also led the way in testing for and eliminating all herbicides and pesticides from the chicken's feed supply. Springer Mountain farmers know what's best for your chicken. We're into that. Better feed, better care for the animals. It just makes sense. From their family's farms to your family's table, Springer Mountain Farms. For more information, visit m.springermountainfarms.com.
And we're back. You are listening to Heritage Radio Network on tour, on location in Nashville, Tennessee. And our guest today is Chef Sal Avila of Prima. So you've kind of scolded me a little bit not to call you Chef, so I'm going to try to remember to keep calling you Sal. Thank you. Can you just say a few words about your vision for Prima?
We wanted to do something different with a fine dining restaurant. You know, everything's super plated, you know, super artsy, fartsy. I wanted to bring in that kind of Napa wine country, rustic, rich uncle feel, where, you know, you're sitting on a patio and the furniture around you is baller as shit, but then you have like a simple grilled fish on the table with some really nice olive oil, maybe some like perfect tomatoes on the side, and just do something simple like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what we're fighting for now, because, you know, a lot of people come in here, they see the sculpture, they see the nice stuff, and they expect that super fine dining, overplated, you know, manipulated food, and, you know, so it's been a struggle, but, you know, a new American food is what we want to do, and I think what that means is I get to do whatever I want, and I hope you like it, you know?
I can vouch for it. And this morning, I really see your aesthetic. I had an amazing plate of chilaquiles that was not fussy. It was perfect. So delicious. Smoky chicken.
Yeah, you got brunch. That's kind of like the redhead stepchild. You know, I got to like really have fun with the brunch menu, and that's why we do chilaquiles. And because I want to eat chilaquiles is what I want to eat when I'm hungover. Mm-hmm. You know, and I usually come to work on Sunday hungover. Mm-hmm. So it's good to have all the stuff that you want to eat while you're hungover at work. So it's just better for your food costs to have it on the menu.
Sure.
Hangover food, you know.
Sure. And obviously your Mexican heritage plays into your menu here very strongly at Prima, but you seem to have a lot of other international influences as well. And also, you know, being in Nashville, you have the Southern food influence, and, you know, you're taking like the kind of hot chicken culture and doing something different with it. So can you talk a little bit about your other influences and how specifically are you playing with chicken in your restaurant? That's something a little different for Nashville.
Yeah, so as far as my influence goes, you know, my career has been strong Italian, like very Italian, North African, Spanish, and French, so Mediterranean as a whole. And then I moved to Tennessee, and that's when I started getting my roots in Southern food, but mainly Southern ingredients, not so much like cornbread and grits and things like that, but more of like the Southern ingredient. How can I use that in my classical training in Italian food and do something that I want to kind of play with to figure out who I am, you know, because I still don't know shit. I'm only 35, so but as far as chicken goes, here we started doing just grilled chicken and it was really good, and then Francis Mullman came into my life and showed me how to cook chicken on a string, and I kind of fell in love with putting stuff on a string. And to be able to smoke chicken like that with no contact to anything, it just floats there and sitting in smoke for 3 hours. It gets super tender and smoky, and it stays juicy forever. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. And then to put the Nashville spin on it, probably the thing I made most in California was salsa arrabbiata. And it's just like a classic Italian spicy pasta sauce. Mm-hmm. Peppers, tomatoes, you know. And so what I did was take all the peppers we have seasonally, plus all the pickled peppers I've had from last year, all the, you know, Calabrian chilies, the dried chilies, you know, we pretty much put every chili we have, you know, we balance it pretty well, I think, and make that sauce that we smoke some stuff, we burn some stuff, but we cook it in the angry style where I usually put on some shitty music, maybe like Taylor Swift to put me in a really bad mood, and then I turn the pan on way too hot, and then I just start cooking, and then I get way too busy, spread myself really thin, burn the sauce, so it like pisses me off even more, and then I just build the flavors that way, and it usually turns out pretty damn awesome. All intentional, yeah. Uh-huh. But you got to kind of make it unintentional, you know. It's a tricky thing, and I think that's what makes it so beautiful, you know.
Yeah. Absolutely. That salsa came out of this morning was really something special.
Yeah.
And see the strong Francis Mallman influence, but I think you really made that your own. And
yeah, thank
it
you.
It was so fresh. But
the
special
chicken and the chilaquiles is actually the leftover chicken on a string.
Nice.
From last night. So
yeah.
Whatever we don't use last night, we just pull that, and that's why it's so smoky and tender and still juicy.
So I think it's safe to say that I won breakfast this morning.
Yeah.
Ask one thing. Describe the chicken and a string setup like that you have in the kitchen. Try to like for radio listeners, you know.
So if you can imagine just any normal commercial kitchen, we have the hood system. We have an 8-foot wide hood over our charboil or our wood burning grill. I bought a closet rod from Home Depot, stainless steel, and that hangs about at, I want to say, I'm 6 foot. 6 foot two on the radio. So about 7'2", it hangs the rod. And so we just take regular butcher's twine about 2 feet, about a foot over the grill with a nice medium fire. And the chicken is trussed in a way where we can spin it in any direction. And we use the hangers that our linen companies throw away. We cut those into little pieces to make hooks out of them. And we just kind of hang it. We always start on the back first, so we hang breast side up and kind of heat the chicken gently through the back so you're not really overcooking anything. Mm-hmm. And then the last probably 30 minutes, we flip it over onto the breast and really and caramelize that skin and try to render the skin as much as possible. So when we finish it, it has some texture to it, and it's not that gelatinous, gross grandma boiled chicken stuff.
Yeah. Awesome.
Make sense?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
You ready to do it on your own? Yeah.
Yeah. So in your LinkedIn profile, Sal, you say that going to culinary school doesn't make you a chef, and that you'll know when you're a chef.
Yeah.
With all the success that you're having at Prima, would you say now that you are, in fact, a chef?
No, because the little things still bother me. You know, I still have those moments where I panic and don't realize I know the answer. I think when you become a chef, it's when anything happens and you're just like, huh, all right, fuck it, let's do it. And if you look at Thomas Keller and Daniel Boulud and those guys that are like the monumental chefs, and you just see the way they walk, their swag, that's what makes you a chef. The fact that you can just walk into a kitchen and see a steak 20 feet away and be like, oh, it's overcooked. You know, it's like, how do you know that?
Superhero.
Chef. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I always tell people, like, it's, people nowadays, because the chef thing is so big, that people use the word chef, like 14-year-olds use the word love. You know, just because of this feeling inside, I love you so much, it's never going to go away, you know. No, you don't know shit, you know. But to be a chef, I mean, it takes a lot more than a degree, especially a one-year associate's degree from some shit school with retired cooks, you know. It's so hard to be a chef, to know how to fix a refrigerator, you know, watch your food costs, adjust your schedule on the fly, please your GM, stroke your owner. You know, it's just so many things that could really destroy your insides, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's a struggle every day to come to work and be like, yeah, I'm here, I'm going to do this 100%. You know, to do that every day is a struggle. So to be called a chef, I think, is when you walk in every day, no struggle ever again.
Yeah.
Because you know you have the people around you that could do it, you know.
Well, I think it's safe to say you're well on
Long-winded.
Your way. I appreciate, too, that level of humility and honesty that you really bring.
Well, thank you.
But I really have to commend you that at such a young age, you are really having incredible success here and been just absolutely celebrated in the media, the local and national media. So I think that's been really cool for you.
I think it's just affirmative action at work, you know.
Oh,
for every three gringos, I need to add a Latino in there. So.
No. All right. I got to ask you one question based on some media coverage that I saw. There's a profile of you in the Tennessean, and you've had a lot of experience in restaurants in the U.S. from coast to coast.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a hint in there that you were coast hopping because you were following love from coast to coast,
yep.
And then you wound up returning home. And I was wondering if you wouldn't mind sharing a little bit of that story with us.
All right, so this is when I first started cooking. I was in California, and the girl I was seeing at the time, she had some psoriasis. And her doctor, after all the treatments we tried, or she tried, was like, you know, you could really do good with a lot of salt water and sun. Fucking Hawaii. Let's go to Hawaii. I mean, we're surrounded by salt water and sun. So we did that, and it was really hard for me to find a job out there because the turnover is so low because nobody leaves. And there wasn't really the kind of food I wanted to cook. I didn't research it that well. I just thought, I mean, you know, my ego was a lot bigger back then because I was 21, but, you know, it was hard to find a job. So I started doing home theater work, and I didn't last very long in Hawaii, like 6 months, and I got an island fever, and I had to leave. Went back to California, got with a different girl, and then broke my heart again, and then, I broke her heart, or I don't remember what happened. We were drunk the whole time. So then I came back to Nashville in 2007.
Yeah.
And that's where I met Tandy Wilson in City House, and I think that's when my life started to change for the better, because after 5 months at City House, an old fling sparked back in California, and it just so happened that probably the biggest influence of my life, Robert Holt, who I worked for about 4 years, called me up and wanted to open a restaurant with me. I was like, all right, well, this is all working out pretty awesome, you know. Everything was lining up, so why not? We opened Marzano in Oakland in 2007, and it was a big hit. We killed it. Kind of had a little issues with alcohol, and and medical marijuana. No, I didn't have a card. My friends got it all for me. And so, you know, and then my nephews here in Tennessee started to grow up and get bigger, and they needed a positive influence in their life, you know. So I decided to come back home, clean up, and, you know, go back to City House and just, like, really be a family person again, you know, because I was away from my whole family for 8 years, you know, and learning how to cook in California, basically. So I figured I kind of had the chops, and so I came back to Nashville.
Wow. Well, it seems like it all really worked out for you in the end.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And there was a stint there where I didn't want to be in Nashville, and I, you know, spent a couple of days in New York cooking, and that's about it.
You were in New York? Where were you in New York?
It was like a kind of one of those vacations where you have no money, so I just go to a restaurant at 6 a.m., knock on the door, and be like, can I cook?
Wow.
Just for the day, you know? I'm not looking for a job. I just want to see what it's like cooking in New York, and I, honestly, I'm broke, and I would like to have family meal. And I can, you know, I have skills, you know.
Will work for family meal,
leg,
yeah.
So, yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a fun way to meet people, and it's a, I guess, a cheap way to be a tourist.
Yeah, for real. Awesome, man. We're going to switch gears for a quick little segment. We are joined by Odetta Hartman, who, as well as taking awesome photos and helping out with all these interviews, is a musician herself. So I'm going to pass the mic over to her for a quick little music segment on this.
Shit, please don't make me sing a song.
How do you do?
That's a good idea.
No, we're not going to put you on the spot, but we cannot ignore the fact that we are here in Nashville, Tennessee, also known as Music City. And while we are focusing on your fabulous food, we do have some questions about who your favorite musicians are.
Ooh.
I know you mentioned you don't like Taylor Swift.
No, I don't like Taylor Swift, but yeah. I think she's hot, though. So I'm going to go way back. I'm going to go with Sergei Rachmaninoff, who's probably one of my favorites, George Gershwin, and then Frank Sinatra. New people, you know, it's hard for me to get into anything new. Like,
So now take a moment and imagine that Rachmaninoff, yeah, Gershwin, and Sinatra are all sitting in one of these amazingly classy booths right here. What would you put on a plate in front of those fine fellows?
A really nice Pappy Van Winkle, some hand-rolled cigarettes, and then I definitely start with some salami. We do a lot of charcuterie here, and I think I'm getting pretty good at it. Some big pieces of meat, and I don't know what do depressed Russians like to eat? I mean, boiled potatoes, maybe. Maybe I'll put some hot sauce on it to show them what life is like. And I don't know, I guess Frank Sinatra, though, I'm sure he would eat anything I put in front of me. I'm thinking, like, definitely pasta in front of all Blue Eyes, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're smoking in the restaurant.
Yeah, yeah. Fuck yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I wouldn't tell him. Don't tell the owner, but yeah. Yeah. We have high ceilings. Nobody will ever know.
Well, thank you.
Awesome. All right. Well, we're wrapping up here. Two little quick things we end with. This is a thing we do on all of our interviews called Big Ups. Basically just giving you a chance to big up somebody in the community that you think is also doing great work, whether it's a chef or really anybody, just somebody you want to give some big ups to.
I'll start with Jennifer Justice. She's an old food writer here in town. She's right for the Tennessean, but she's doing this kind of farm project with refugees from Nepal and all these other third world countries, and she brings them here through, I forgot the name of the